People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
Since 9/11, for every American who's died in battle, dozens more have survived, thanks to cutting-edge military medical care. That means that unlike any other time in history, many more severely wounded vets are returning home and facing huge challenges in housing, employment, and support services. The Veterans Administration spends more than $115 billion a year on health care, disability, and pensions for the nation's 21 million vets. But nonetheless, its programs are totally stretched. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and on this episode of the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing, we'll focus in on the unique challenges that returning veterans face and what one organization is doing about it. Our guest is Mike Conklin, a successful realtor with RE/MAX International, the father of three Army Rangers, and the founder of the nonprofit organization Sentinels of Freedom. Sentinels connects permanently disabled veterans with caring community volunteers who pool their resources to provide 4 years of housing, an accessible vehicle, a suitable job, and ongoing community support and self-sufficiency services. It's a brilliant model, and it's working. Mike, welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be with you this morning.
Mike, tell us about the origins of Sentinels of Freedom. What motivated you to undertake this enormous challenge?
Well, it goes back to 1997 when my oldest son was joining the military. I had gone to a high school graduation to honor one of his buddies who was going in a year before him. And I was interested in the fact that the superintendent of school and the principal of school talked about the valedictorian. They talked about the science student, the music student, even the special needs student. But they didn't mention the fact that there was about 10 other students who were going directly into the military upon graduation. I got angry. I sat down with the principals a few months later because there were three high schools. I found out that none of them had mentioned the kids going into the military. So I sat down with the principals and I said, well, help me understand this. Here are these young men and women making the highest level commitment to our nation that any graduating high school student could make. Why don't you say something about them? And they said, oh my God, Mike, we would love to, but we don't know who they are. They don't come to our career counselors. They don't talk to the teachers. They talk to the recruiters. And then we find out just before they graduate and it's too late. But we would like to, if you'll get us the names, we would like to honor them. So I marched down to the recruiting office and said, give me the names, please. And they said, oh, we can't do that. Regulations. And that really made me angry. So I went and thought about it a while. Then I went back and I said, look, one of the things that they teach you guys is to work with local community leaders to help you with your recruiting drive. And so I'm going to help you. Here is a stack of invitations. I want you to hand them out to your recruits. I'm inviting them and their parents and the recruiter to a luncheon where we will have our mayor and other local business leaders there to talk to them about how much we appreciate their decision. And the message we will send them is that when you come home, if you need some help getting into school or a job, you come see us. We are willing to help. We think it's our responsibility. That was really the start of Sentinels of Freedom. We continued that all the way up until 9/11. Of course, at that time, I had two sons in the Rangers, and I was very well briefed on what was going to happen in Afghanistan and what I suspected would happen in Iraq. And I knew we would have casualties coming home to our community. I also knew our community was not prepared for this. They had no plan. So I gathered a group of businessmen up. I said, if something happens to a young man or woman from our community, we have to supplement the VA because the VA is very impersonal. You know, they can't do what we can do. And they said, well, that's great, Mike. If that's what you want to do, develop the plan. If it happens, we'll implement it. And sure enough, it did happen. One of our kids from San Ramon High School was crushed by an Abrams tank coming home to nothing. Didn't have a car, didn't have a house to live in, didn't have any furniture, didn't have nothing. And so I reconvened the group. I said, here's what I'm going to do. His kid's name was Jacob Brown. I said, I'm going to get Jake. I'm going to get him into an apartment. I'll furnish it. I'm going to get him a car. I'm going to get him a job, and I'm going to get him in school. And by God, if I have to walk at his side for the next 4 years to make sure he's successful, I'm going to do it. Now, who wants to join me? All the hands around the table went up.
Now, this is true leadership, I have to say. This is how you do it. You say, this is a need. This is where we can make a difference. Who's in?
Exactly. Of course, growing up in this area, I know who to ask and who not to ask. I mean, you really have to look at people individually and say, what do they bring to the table? Do they have the same ethos that I have in this field? And they did. And that Jake came home. We did everything we said we were going to do. He got a job working from midnight to 6 a.m. at UPS. Worked his way all the way through college with them. And now is working at Sybase and finishing his master's degree at St. Mary's.
And this is probably not a unique story. How many Sentinels have you helped thus far?
Well, we have, if you look at the total combined number, about 130 across the nation. That doesn't sound like a big number.
Oh, yes, it does.
But yeah, you have to realize the complexity of just getting one guy out of the hospital system, home, stabilized, and a team of people around them. And then, of course, the funding cost, of which, you know, we can discuss, is the biggest cost is housing. And they're all severe. I mean, you know, burned, blind, amputee, paraplegics, gunshot wounds. You know, we've got several guys that have gunshot wounds to the head. We've got a few blind soldiers. Talk about difficult. That's a 20-person team.
You must have cadre. Right, I was going to say you must have cadres of volunteers.
Yeah, and what we do is we really have to listen to what when we visit in the hospitals. Our job is to listen and listen very hard, reading between the lines, so to speak, as to what they want to do, what is possible and achievable, what their expectations are. And then we say, all right, well, I think we can do this. If you're thinking about a degree in law, that's wonderful. But we're talking about getting you through the first 2 years and then the next 2 years.
So every case has to be completely customized. You can't have a template.
Yeah, it is. It is. You cannot cookie cutter this. This is one of the reasons nobody does this. We have not found another organization. In fact, we've been told by the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff that he's never seen anything like it. Admiral Mullen calls us the gold standard, and that which is wonderful, except then he pokes me in the chest and says, you've got to help hundreds more. You know, well, this is a tough order. Each one of these scholarships averages about $100,000 over a four-year period.
How do you raise this money?
Well, it's interesting how we do it. We don't mass media. We don't mass mail. We don't do, you know, T-shirt sales and rock concerts. We go point to point. It's the only way I've ever known how to do anything. I call it it's a shoe leather method. We knock on doors of corporate leaders, of course, foundations. We get a certain amount of grants from foundations. As far as cost to raise a dollar, we're very effective at that, and we have a very reasonable overhead at 20%. Some of these groups out there are running at 60% overhead. So 80% of our dollar goes to direct support. But, you know, we're not a marketing company. We've done this through meeting individuals across the nation, telling our story face-to-face, and then people retell that story. And pretty soon we get a call. There's a lot of hand of God in this, and it's the only way I can explain it.
Who are some of your biggest sponsors?
Well, we have individuals that have sponsored a Sentinel, you know, at $100,000. You know, wealthy, I guess you would say, or well-off people. We have some corporations, Chevron, AT&T, Wells Fargo, American Airlines, Quest, Verizon, Northrop Grumman, General Dynamics. Again, without doing the mass marketing, you can imagine the time it takes to cultivate these relationships.
Absolutely. But the biggest ones, once you've got them on board, and that's why I asked you, because I think you know, corporations allocate this kind of money, but if they also feel like people are acknowledging their contributions, perhaps they'll continue. So, Mike, when it comes to finding a job, we know that a tough economy is even tougher for returning veterans. Recently, might have been last month, the unemployment rate for veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan war was 10.8%. That's a full 3 percentage points above the national average. For disabled veterans, it must be even higher, right?
Yeah, of course. They can't go out and get a physical job, an entry-level job, or working at Walmart throwing boxes or stocking shelves. They just can't do it. They're physically incapable.
So what kind of resources are available for them?
Well, the biggest resource that's available to them is education, and that is paid for. I mean, the GI Bill and voc rehab can pay for pretty much all of that. The issue is when they go to a private university like University San Diego or Stanford or something, the tuition is much higher than what the GI Bill pays. So in those cases, we offer to bridge the gap. Georgetown, places like that. We have several guys going to Georgetown. David Lipscomb out in Nashville, Tennessee. And so if they can get started on track with their developing their education, that's great. Just like any other student, though, you can go through 4 years of school on one track and come out the other end and still not know anything about the trade that you're interested in. I mean, you know the basics. So we try to get them involved with an individual who's willing to monitor them and mentor them somewhere around the second or third year, bring them into a corporation and do a little internship, show them around the corporation so they get a real idea why they're getting their education. So there's a lot to that education part. But then, of course, what we want to do is seeing them become completely self-sufficient. They will always get, at this level, they will always get a disability check. They are 100% disabled, most of them. However, that is just existence money. It's not wealth building. If they want to have a family and buy a house and all those things, especially in areas like the Bay Area, which is the highest cost of living in the nation, these disability payments are not COLA related. I mean, you get the same check in Biloxi, Mississippi as you do here, and it's not a whole lot. The other issue is that these individuals will face a shorter lifespan due to this terrific impact on their body, which means also they'll spend less time in the employment sector. They will have continual medical issues all their life. Several of our guys, just in a four-year period, have to go back into the hospital for continuing reconstructive surgery. We had a young SEAL, Navy SEAL, down in Scottsdale that went in for reconstructive surgery on his face. He was blind, and we lost him in post-op. You really have to put all that in perspective. If you look at a track of time, kid getting right out of high school and going into college and a kid getting out and going into 4 years of the military. In the military, he can gain a lot of knowledge. He can actually go to school while he's in the military if he applies himself, and that's paid for. But now, hit him with, you know, a loss of legs. He's going to spend 2 to 3 years in a military hospital. So now, as the kid that's gone right from high school into college is tracking on his education and towards the goal of employment, our guy has lost ground. He's basically got to catch up quickly and to be competitive in the job market. Corporations want to hire disabled members of the military. However, a lot of it is window washing, billboarding. They say we want to hire disabled veterans. What they really mean is we want to hire qualified disabled veterans. That, and most of these jobs means a degree, a minimum of 2-year degree.
Which somebody has to pay for.
That's right. So the money for education is not really the big issue. We can work around that. We've got a lot of help from the VA and GI Bill. But at the end of 4 years, they're basically broke. If they go on to their master's and have to pay for that, now they're in debt.
Well, not just that, but they have housing and other
That's right.
other sorts of needs during that 2 or 4 years.
there's a quid pro quo in this. A young man that goes in the military, gets his GI Bill, comes out the other side, goes to school, gets a job. That's a square deal. He's gained something tremendous because he's gotten some experience, and now he's got his money for college, and he moves forward. When you rip somebody's legs off or blind them or burn them or whatever in the severe category, the quid pro quo goes out the window. It is not a square deal. And so our job, what we decided to do, was focus on the areas where we could take some of the weight off their backs so they could breathe and concentrate on education and long-term employment and career. So that's really what we're all about. It's not rocket science. It's a lot of research. You know, we have to pick individuals that are really motivated. And we tell them all the time, this is not a free lunch. This is not a charity. This is an investment. We are investing in you. And what we want to see you do is push hard, move forward, stay engaged, and be successful. And we will help you get there.
Mike, the local VA offices are often completely overwhelmed, and we hear that they're slow to manage claims. Are there groups that help vets navigate the system?
Probably the most effective group out there are these county veteran service officers that are supported by each county, Contra Costa, Alameda, San Mateo. They are pretty darn effective, and they supplement the VA process, but you got to walk in the door. As a veteran, you have to accept personal responsibility. Nobody's going to do this for you. If you wait for somebody to do it for you, it's not going to happen.
That's true of everything in life, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about housing for a moment here. Obviously, the cost of housing is on the rise here in Northern California, and as well in other places, I'm sure. What kind of housing resources are available for veterans? I know that there are homeless assistant vouchers, but that's for those at risk of homelessness. What about people who aren't at that point but still need help?
Well, pretty much all of these guys, when they come home, are they're homeless already when they hit the ground here. They've got to go find an apartment and rent it or move in with a family member. And, you know, most of them can't afford to buy a house in this area. And to buy a house, you got to have a job. So it's going to be a while till they find a job. You know, California is unique, Northern California, in that we have probably the highest level of consumer protection and environmental regulations in the United States. And you really look at it, you say, why can I buy a house in Dallas, Texas for, you know, 2,500 square foot house for $150,000? And that house in Livermore costs $800,000. You know, why is that? It's supply and demand is one thing, but the other thing is just tremendous overregulation.
So building new housing, for instance, that would accommodate vets is a daunting prospect.
Yeah, and
yet you're doing it, right?
Yeah, we're looking at all sorts of options as far as transitional housing goes, kind of getting them back, getting them into a good rental, getting them into school, and then transitioning to buying their first house. And that's been the case of several of our guys. But it takes time.
Sure. If you were giving advice, Mike, to elected officials about policies and programs that returning vets need, what would you suggest?
The VA hospital systems actually are very well funded, even though they aren't so efficient, I would say. Right now, to get a claim processed in Oakland, California, it's about 500 days. Nationwide average is about 270 or something like that.
That's really deplorable.
It's sickening, and I can't figure it out. Now, if you say, what could an official do, elected officials, well, they could get down there and find out why that's happening and make a difference. So I think the elected officials just getting involved, becoming more aware and you know, getting involved. That's their job.
Mike, if someone wants to hire a veteran, for instance, are there particular places where you can post employment opportunities? I'm just thinking of ways that our listeners might want to personally help.
There's several websites out there. In fact, there's thousands that work with promoting hiring veterans. And, you know, is one better than the other? I mean, there's Department of Labor, there's, you know, all these different groups out there. I don't think it's any different than a college student graduating and going on the web and searching and putting his resume in. You know, the veterans have to do the same thing.
So really just announce it and promote a job opportunity as broadly as possible.
Yeah, it's I mean, first of all, these companies can never meet, you know, their quotas. They say we're going to hire 500 veterans. They never meet it. 500, you'd have to go out and hit people over the head and drag them in the door. It doesn't work. You know, and then again, what are the expectations of that company? The company, their expectation is they're using the same hiring criteria, measuring the individual's brain power to put them in that job. They're not going to just give somebody a job because they're a veteran. You got to take it. You got to grab it and earn it. I mean, they've earned the opportunity, but many of them haven't earned the education to really exploit the opportunity.
If people want to know more about Sentinels of Freedom, where can we direct them?
Our website is www.sentinels.org. Or they can call our office, which is 925-380-6342. I would say we give that number out not reluctantly at all. However, people must understand that we are helping a very small percentage of the whole military service. And we start at 9/11. We don't go back to Vietnam. We're not looking for donations of, you know, canned goods and things like that. And we have a very strong volunteer cadre. What we are looking for is innovation from people who say, I want to help. This is what I can do. And we do the rest.
Mike Conklin, thank you so much for all the work that you do. Mike's the founder of Sentinels of Freedom. I also want to thank your wife for the work she does with Blue Star Moms. And all the work that you both do on behalf of our nation's Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans. I'm Joanne Green. For more information or to hear previous episodes of the Affordable Housing Podcast, please visit edenhousing.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.